We would like to send out a special thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting The Trail Went Cold. And we would like to thank you, the listeners, by giving you the chance to receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code COLD30. That's COLD30. Enjoy the show.
July 5th, 1965. Lexington, Kentucky. After a night of heavy drinking with her husband and another couple, Mary Mars Kawine returns home. When morning hits, Mary is discovered dead in her bedroom chair, and it turns out she was murdered after ingesting carbolic acid. Suspicion falls upon Mary's husband, Dr. Madison Kawine, who had conducted affairs with two other women during their marriage. However, strange actions from Madison's first mistress and the jealous husband of his second mistress also caused them to become potential suspects, but the carbolic acid cocktail murder is never solved. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and we've got one heck of a case for you today. The 1965 murder of Mary Mars Kawine. This is a request from a listener named Wes, a big supporter of the show who also happens to hail from Kentucky, where this story takes place. I had never heard of this case before he sent it to me, but once I delved into it, I fell into a very deep rabbit hole, so thanks for the suggestion, Wes. Quite simply, out of all the cases I've covered on this podcast, this is the one which probably most resembles a soap opera. Like I said in the intro, this has been dubbed the carbolic acid cocktail murder, and the story pretty much has everything. We have a wife who was murdered in the most unusual fashion imaginable, a physician husband who has cheated on her with multiple women, one mistress who is also a doctor and an obsessive stalker to boot, and a second mistress with a doctor husband who had his own motive to commit murder. If anybody wrote a fictional story like this, it would be dismissed as cheesy, melodramatic trash, but everything I'm about to share with you actually happened. The end result is a very bizarre whodunit which remains unsolved over 50 years later, but I'm going to do my best to try and determine who the most likely perpetrator was. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which is currently available for download on several platforms including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold also has its own PayPal account and a donate button on the website. If there's anyone out there who wants to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it, and we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the carbolic acid cocktail murder of Mary Mars Kawine. Our story begins in Lexington, Kentucky in 1965. Our central figure is 39-year-old Mary Mars Kawine, a housewife and socialite who was married to her 39-year-old husband, Dr. Madison Kawine III. The couple have been together 16 years and have a son and daughter. Mary and Madison both hail from very prominent families. Mary's father is George Swinebroad, who is renowned for being the state's top thoroughbred auctioneer and has sold off 9 horses which went on to win the Kentucky Derby. Madison is named after his grandfather, former poet laureate of Kentucky, who published 36 books and wrote over 1,500 poems. Mary had aspirations of a career in animal pathology, but gave them up when she got married and had children, while Madison works as a hematologist and associate professor at the University of Kentucky Medical Center. On the evening of July 4th, the K-Wines decided to celebrate Independence Day by going to the Idle Hour Country Club with two friends of theirs, a married couple named Sam and Betty Struther, who lived three blocks away. While the K-Wines' son was spending the night with a friend, their daughter and the Struthers' two children would both be left in the hands of a babysitter at the K-Wine home. After arriving at the country club, the K-Wines and the Struthers spent the night drinking heavily, and everyone involved consumed at least 10 cocktails each. When the two couples left the club, they went to the Struther residence to continue their drinking. However, shortly after midnight on July 5th, Mary told everyone she wasn't feeling well and wanted to go home, so Sam drove her back to her house. The three children were now sleeping, so a taxi was called for the babysitter. While waiting for the cab to arrive, Sam and Mary went up to the master bedroom to have another drink. According to Sam, they decided to go up there because it was the only room in the house which had an air conditioner. Mary poured herself a bourbon and water, while Sam drank a can of beer, but after the taxi picked up the babysitter, Sam left the residence at around 1:30 a.m. He remembered that the front door was left unlocked, and the porch light was left on. After driving back home, Sam continued drinking with Betty and Madison until around 3 a.m. By this point, Madison had become so intoxicated that he decided to spend the night there and fell asleep in the family room. When morning hit, Betty attempted to call the K-Wine residence to speak with Mary. The children answered the phone and said that Mary was still in her bedroom. Betty told them not to wake her up and had her husband go pick the children up to bring them to their house for breakfast. Later that morning, Betty decided to drive over to the K-Wine residence to check on Mary. When Betty went up to the master bedroom, she was surprised to discover Mary sitting in a chair with her head slumped over to the left-hand side. She was fully clothed, the light beside her chair was on, and Mary's half-full glass of bourbon and water, along with Sam's empty beer can, were both on the table next to her. Initially, Betty just believed that Mary was still sleeping, but had no luck waking her up, and when she touched Mary's arm, she discovered it was very cold. Betty immediately phoned her husband and told him and Madison to come over to the house because something was wrong. And here's where things started getting odd. Upon finding his wife, the first thing Madison did was grab the half-full glass of bourbon and the beer can from the table, handed them over to Sam, and asked him to, quote-unquote, dispose of this. After examining Mary, Madison openly stated that he believed she suffered a heart attack. He then proceeded to call another doctor named William Winternitz to come over to the house and perform his own examination. When Dr. Winternitz arrived and looked at Mary, he officially pronounced her dead at 10:30 a.m. Winternitz noticed a spot of blood on Mary's slip and the arm of her chair, and then discovered what appeared to be two injection marks on each of her thighs, even though no hypodermic needle could be found in the vicinity. There were no signs of any break-in or struggle, and since the bed was still made, and a half-empty glass of bourbon and an open book were found next to Mary, it seemed likely that she was in the midst of drinking and reading in her chair when she died. Dr. Winternitz informed the county coroner about Mary's death, and recommended that her body be sent to the University of Kentucky Medical Center for an autopsy. Surprisingly, even though there was no suicide note, Madison openly stated that he believed Mary might have taken her own life, but still consented to the autopsy. When the autopsy was performed, it was discovered that Mary had a blood alcohol level of 0.4, which was just below the lethal level. However, it would turn out that her exact cause of death was carbolic acid poisoning. In fact, the exact words on the autopsy report were acute gastritis due to phenol or phenol-like material. Carbolic acid was often used for medical purposes as an anesthetic, but was considered lethal if ingested orally. It seemed likely that someone had laced one of Mary's drinks with carbolic acid before she ingested it. When mixed with alcohol, carbolic acid becomes diluted and does not produce a burning sensation, so a person could ingest it without even knowing. But once the alcohol enters their bloodstream, the acid becomes volatile again and proceeds to burn out their stomach, causing fatal gastritis. Due to the fact that Mary had fresh injection marks on her thighs and blood spots were found on her slip and the chair, it was possible that someone had injected her with something which rendered her immobile before she was forced to consume an alcoholic drink laced with carbolic acid. The autopsy could not determine whether Mary had been injected with something, but there were traces of methylparaben, an antiseptic for hypodermic needles, near the injection mark on her right thigh. It was concluded that Mary's death likely took place sometime between 2 and 6 a.m. that morning. While on average, it would generally take around 30 minutes for carbolic acid to take effect after it entered a subject's body, the times can vary, so it was possible that Mary could have consumed the acid hours beforehand while drinking at the country club. Of course, they couldn't actually check to see if the last glass of bourbon she drank had been poisoned because, you know, her husband asked his friend to dump it out. Anyway, believe it or not, since there were no obvious signs of foul play, the police were not informed about Mary's death until they received the autopsy report, which concluded she had been poisoned, so they did not launch an official homicide investigation until 4 days later. Perhaps not surprisingly, Madison disputed the findings and demanded that a second autopsy be performed, even though the first one had been witnessed by 4 other doctors who all agreed with the results. When questioned by police, Madison initially claimed that the table next to Mary's chair was empty when he arrived that morning, and he did not mention the glass of bourbon and water or the beer can. But when the Struthers told the police about them, Madison changed his story and claimed that he had picked up the glass and smelled the bourbon, but when he didn't detect anything wrong with it, he asked Sam to dispose of it. After police performed a search of the Kaywines' bedroom, they found a syringe in a drawer on the bedside table next to Mary's body. The syringe had Madison's fingerprints on it, but he claimed to have no idea where it came from and believed it was planted there. Another suspicious event took place when Madison phoned Mary's parents after reviewing the autopsy report and never mentioned any poisoning, claiming that the pathologist told him she'd taken too many Alka-Seltzers, which caused gas to build up in her system and gave her a fatal heart attack. Anyway, a bunch of other revelations would soon emerge about the Kaywines' marriage, which cast Madison in a very bad light, and this is where the whole soap opera aspect of this story comes into play. Investigators would learn from Mary's father that Madison had told her he wanted a divorce. For 2 years, Madison had carried on an affair with a fellow doctor, 38-year-old Emma LaPat. Like Madison, Emma worked in hematology at the University of Kentucky Medical Center and already had one prior divorce under her belt. Interestingly enough, Madison and Emma had originally met while working together at a hospital in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and during that time period, a female patient at the hospital died after being poisoned, though there doesn't seem to be any more detailed information out there about this. Madison told police that he had ended his relationship with Emma the previous fall, but that wasn't the end of Madison's infidelity. At the time of Mary's death, he was involved in an affair with one of his patients, Barbara Liebman, who also happened to be the wife of another doctor named Herschel Liebman. While Madison claimed that Mary never knew about his affair with Barbara, Mary's grandmother said otherwise. Mary had apparently told her grandmother that she feared Madison could lose his medical license for having an affair with a patient, or that Herschel Liebman would try and kill him if he found out. When Barbara was interviewed by police, she told them that she was pregnant and seeking an abortion. It was unclear if the father of her unborn child was Madison or her husband, but she was apparently going to get Madison to perform the abortion for her. The affair between Madison and Emma continued on after Mary's death, but she apparently became suspicious and fearful of him. When Barbara asked Madison if he believed Mary had taken her own life, Madison reportedly replied that she was not the suicidal type, even though he had been so insistent Mary committed suicide after her body was found. Adding further fuel to the fire was the fact that Emma LaPat did not take well to Madison ending his relationship with her. She had grown obsessive about Madison and would reportedly drive by his house and call him on a frequent basis. Emma pretty much did the same thing to Barbara Liebman and seemed determined to win Madison back from her. Emma made several odd phone calls to Barbara and during one public encounter, flat out told her to stay away from Madison. Being that they were work colleagues, Emma tried to order the University of Kentucky Medical Center secretarial staff not to put through any calls from Barbara to Madison. But the craziest incident between the two women occurred 2 months after Mary's death. The main reason Barbara was being treated by Madison in the first place was because she suffered from Hodgkin's lymphoma. On a day in which Madison was away from the office, Barbara underwent some tests by a neurosurgeon at the same medical center. Emma wound up intercepting the results before Madison could see them, and being a fellow hematologist, she advised the neurosurgeon to treat Barbara with a drug called nitrogen mustard, which is a chemotherapy agent derived from mustard gas. Well, the problem is that nitrogen mustard was only supposed to be used to treat extreme cases of lymphoma, which were spreading rapidly, and this was certainly not the case with Emma's condition at that time. Needless to say, when Madison found out about this, he did not recommend this treatment for Barbara, and they were both quite upset that Emma would overstep her boundaries like that. Shortly after Mary's death, a maid at the Liebman residence claimed she received an anonymous phone call from a female who warned that Barbara's life was in danger and that she'd better watch the company she was keeping. Anyway, Emma's alibi on the night of Mary's murder was that she went out to dinner with an acquaintance before she returned home at around 9:30 p.m. and went to bed. But it would turn out that Emma was the one who informed Dr. Herschel Liebman that his wife was having an affair. Herschel claimed that 1 month before the murder, he received an anonymous phone call at midnight from a woman claiming to be the wife of a doctor at the University of Kentucky Medical Center, informing Herschel that her husband was having an affair with Barbara, and that if he didn't do something about it, she would. A few days later, Herschel received a phone call from Emma, who asked him to meet her at her office. When they met, Emma told Herschel that his wife was having an affair with a University of Kentucky doctor, but wouldn't name him. However, after meeting Emma, Herschel became convinced that she was the anonymous caller who had previously spoken to him. Now, Herschel eventually did figure out that Madison Kawine was the man having an affair with his wife, and wound up becoming a potential suspect because of an odd series of events which took place on the night of the murder. Herschel was working the graveyard shift at his hospital during the early morning hours of July 5th, when a telephone operator relayed a message to him sometime between 2:30 and 3 a.m. from Barbara, who supposedly needed him at home. Well, Herschel figured the whole thing was a ruse in order for him to rush home and catch his wife in bed with another man, so here's where things get really bizarre. Herschel supposedly called Fayette County Police to get some advice on how to handle the situation. Over an hour later, he then showed up at their headquarters with some license plate numbers he wanted them to run. According to Herschel, ever since he learned about Barbara's affair, his lawyer had advised him not to physically confront the man she was involved with, but to gather evidence against them instead, in case the marriage were to fall apart and they had to go to court in the future. So after receiving the phone call at the hospital, Herschel drove to his apartment building, but instead of going inside, he wrote down the license numbers of any strange vehicles which were parked nearby and turned them over to the police. According to the officer on duty, Herschel appeared to be very nervous and under great stress when he arrived at the station, and his clothing was in disarray. It doesn't look like the lead with the license numbers went anywhere, but when Herschel left the station, he was in such a frenzied mood that he sideswiped one of the police cars. Herschel then claimed that he went to his apartment to find his wife sleeping alone before he returned to the hospital to finish his shift. One aspect of the murder investigation which caused a lot of confusion was an eyewitness account from a newspaper carrier, who told police he delivered a paper to the Kawine residence sometime between 3 and 3:30 a.m. that morning, and remembered seeing three cars parked there. Two of the vehicles belonged to the Kawines, and it made sense they'd be there, since the Struthers had driven them to the country club. But the news carrier said that the third vehicle was a late model light blue convertible. Anyway, a grand jury investigation was held in Fayette County Circuit Court in September of 1965, and numerous witnesses were called upon to testify, but the grand jury ultimately found insufficient evidence to indict anyone. And incidentally, on the day she was called to testify, Emma LaPate got into an altercation in which she assaulted a photographer. This pretty much brought the investigation to a dead halt. It's unclear if the relationship between Madison Kawine and Barbara Liebman continued on, but Madison passed away in 1985. In 2009, two cold case detectives from the Lexington Police Department decided to look into the case and discovered that Emma LaPate was still alive at the age of 83. When detectives went to interview Emma at her home, she was uncooperative and stated that she was appalled that police were wasting taxpayer money on this. Emma passed away 1 year later, and there have been no further developments. So after 5 decades, the carbolic acid cocktail murder of Mary Mars Kawine remains unsolved. So I guess you could say, The Trail Went Cold.
But before we continue, we would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh.com, for supporting our podcast. The Trail Went Cold has teamed up with HelloFresh, and they are offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code COLD30. The life of a podcaster is a busy one, as I'm preparing a brand new episode every single week, so obviously, I don't want to spend too much of my spare time preparing my meals. That's why I'm grateful for the convenience of HelloFresh, whose meals are delivered right to your door in an insulated, recyclable package. They have three different plans to choose from, Classic, Veggie, and Family, and I've really enjoyed the meals HelloFresh has sent to me thus far. Just the other night, I prepared a delicious meal of crispy-skinned pesto chicken accompanied by zucchini ribbons and thyme-roasted parsnips. The little thyme leaves add both aroma and flavor to your dish. They have a lot of one-pot recipes for seriously speedy cooking and minimal cleanup. And even if you don't think you're the most skilled cook in the world, you can feel confident with these simple recipes because they are outlined on pictured, step-by-step instruction cards. HelloFresh is very useful for someone like me who operates on a busy schedule because I'd much rather be uttering the phrase, "The trail went cold," rather than "The meal went cold." So be sure to go to HelloFresh.com and use the code COLD30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That's COLD30. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the show. So what did I tell you? This entire story sounds like it could belong in a soap opera. The one thing which instantly grabbed my attention was the phrase carbolic acid cocktail murder, as I cannot think of another case in which a victim was murdered from ingesting carbolic acid. It's such an unlikely method to murder someone that your first thought is, who else could dream up something like this but a doctor? I mean, it's likely that only a medical professional would even have access to carbolic acid to begin with. And given that Mary Mars Kaywine's husband was a doctor with a motive to want her dead, you'd think he would be the obvious suspect, but the problem is that there are at least two other potential suspects who also happen to be doctors. At first glance, I thought there was no explanation besides the husband did it, but the more I dug into things, the more complicated this case became. Now, regardless of whether he's guilty or innocent of this murder, it's pretty undeniable that Madison Kaywine was a terrible husband, and he sounds like a pretty lousy human being in general, which is too bad because he actually seemed like an interesting figure in the medical field. During the early 1960s, Madison looked into an urban legend called the Blue Fugates of Kentucky. For over a century, there had been stories of a family named the Fugates, who lived in the state's remote hills and reportedly had blue skin. Well, this story actually turned out to be true, as the Fugates had a rare genetic disease called methemoglobin anemia, which had passed down from generation to generation. Large amounts of a blue hemoglobin called methemoglobin circulated through the Fugates' blood, which caused them to have blue skin even though they were otherwise perfectly healthy. It was Madison Kaywine who decided to study the Fugate family and treat their disease by injecting them with a dye called methylene blue, which finally started to reduce the coloring of their skin. Madison then converted this dye into pill form and gave it to the Fugates, and as time went on, children from that family finally started being born without blue skin. This was a pretty neat accomplishment for Madison, so it's a shame the guy turned out to be a massive douchebag. But I digress, let's get back to the murder. The weird thing about Madison is that even though he seems like the obvious suspect, he does kind of have a solid alibi. Namely, that he was just too damn drunk to have committed this crime. According to Sam and Betty Strother, Madison got so intoxicated that he couldn't even make it to bed, which is why he crashed in their family room that night, so it's debatable whether he could have traveled back home to murder his wife. But let's back up a little bit and start from the beginning. Now, one of the biggest issues with determining who the murderer was in this case is that we can't be 100% certain of the exact time Mary ingested the carbolic acid. While it would ordinarily take around 30 minutes for the acid to take effect in one's body,
It's not an absolute science, so it's not out of the question that she could have consumed it hours beforehand. Given that her blood alcohol level was 0.4, Mary obviously drank an insane amount of alcohol at the country club that night, and some of the early symptoms of carbolic acid poisoning are similar to the symptoms of intoxication, so it would be difficult for Mary or anyone else around her to notice the difference. Remember, after going from the country club to the Struther residence to drink more alcohol, Mary stated that she wasn't feeling well and wanted to go home. I don't think it was ever specified what Mary meant when she said she wasn't feeling well, but you could easily assume that someone spiked one of her drinks at the country club with carbolic acid, and it was starting to take effect. But then again, Mary did pour herself another bourbon and water after she got home, so it's hard to say just how badly she was really feeling. But here's what I find to be the most unusual aspect of this case. The last known person to see Mary alive was Sam Struther, who was with her when that bourbon was poured, and at Madison's request, proceeded to dispose of the bourbon even though it could have contained incriminating evidence. If there's anyone who had the perfect opportunity to poison Mary, it was Sam. But as far as I can tell, this guy has never been considered a serious suspect in the murder. And I can totally see that logic because unlike so many of the other people associated with this case, I don't see any motive for why Sam would want Mary dead. And another thing which works in Sam's favor is that all the other suspects here were doctors who likely would have had the means to acquire carbolic acid and the advanced medical knowledge to know how carbolic acid poisoning worked. Sam, on the other hand, was an insurance and mortgage agent, so this method of murder seems a bit sophisticated for him. Now let's look at the prime suspect, Madison Gaywine. There are more than a few reasons to believe he's guilty. He told Sam to dispose of Mary's glass of bourbon. He called another doctor over to the house to examine Mary before calling the police. He seemed intent on declaring Mary's death a suicide and disagreed with the autopsy report that she was murdered. And of course, he was conducting an affair with another woman and was apparently looking for a divorce. There's also the fact that Mary had injection marks on her thighs and a syringe was found in a bedroom drawer. While no one could conclusively say that this syringe was used to inject Mary, this murder shows all the hallmarks of being meticulously planned by a doctor. And yet, there are a number of things which don't quite add up, most especially the fact that Madison was in a drunken stupor at another house during the approximate time period of Mary's death. I guess the alternate explanation is that Madison could have spiked one of Mary's drinks with carbolic acid while they were at the country club together, but I don't think there's any way he could have accurately predicted how much time would pass before it took effect. Like I said earlier, on average, it would generally take around 30 minutes, and would Madison really want to create a public spectacle with his wife keeling over in front of several witnesses? Under those circumstances, it would probably be a lot more difficult for Madison to dispose of potential evidence. After they left the club and went to the Struther residence, Madison also couldn't have anticipated that Mary would decide to go home because she wasn't feeling well. If he poisoned her drink at the club, it's an awfully convenient coincidence for him that the acid didn't actually take effect until Mary was alone in her bedroom. Given that Mary had injection marks on her thighs, it just seems more likely that someone entered the bedroom to inject her with something before lacing her bourbon with carbolic acid and forcing her to consume it. And would Madison have been capable of pulling off such an intricate murder if he was absolutely hammered? I suppose Madison could have been over-exaggerating how drunk he really was in order to fabricate an alibi for himself. Remember, the Struthers got pretty drunk themselves, so their memories of the evening are a little hazy. But after the Struthers went to bed, Madison could have left their house and walked back home to murder his wife, which isn't implausible at all since it was only 3 blocks away. Madison then returns back to the Struther residence and falls asleep in the family room before everyone wakes up in the morning. But there are some issues with the timing. The Struthers claim they went to bed around 3 a.m., and Sam left the Gaywine residence at around 1:30. When Mary was found, she was fully dressed, her bed was still made, and her glass of bourbon was reportedly half full. This seems to suggest she was killed only a short time after Sam left, but since an open book was found nearby, I guess it's possible that Mary was staying up to read and finish her drink, but she then fell asleep in her chair for over an hour and a half or so before Madison entered the house and killed her. Another potential scenario is that Madison could have hired someone to murder his wife while he was staying at the Strother residence. That isn't out of the question, though it does seem pretty brazen for him to have someone enter the house and commit murder while three children are sleeping there. I know that Sam claimed that he left the door unlocked when he left the Kawine residence, which doesn't seem that unusual since this was 1965 and the house was in an upscale suburban neighborhood, so anybody could have entered the home. I'd say you could definitely rule out the possibility of a random intruder, since there was no robbery or sexual assault, and I seriously doubt some stranger is going to enter a woman's home in the middle of the night to poison her with carbolic acid. It seems very premeditated, and someone could have been watching the house all night and finally went inside after they saw Sam leave. Another complicating factor is the eyewitness account of the newspaper carrier who remembered seeing three cars, only two of which would have belonged to the Kawines, parked at the house between 3 and 3:30 a.m. Of course, given that eyewitnesses in true crime cases are wrong about things they see all the time, you have to take the carrier's account with a grain of salt and realize he might be mistaken. But if the newspaper carrier was correct, and there was another vehicle parked at the house at that time, then this seems to prove that someone else besides Madison Kawine was involved in Mary's murder. There are definitely some other promising suspects, particularly Dr. Emma LaPatte, a jilted ex-lover who seemed to have a fanatical obsession with Madison and viewed every other woman in his life as an obstacle. She definitely had a motive to murder Mary, and given that she was a doctor, it's not out of the question that she'd choose an unusual method of death like carbolic acid poisoning. While there's nothing really wrong with Emma's alibi per se, saying that she returned home at 9:30 p.m., and spent the rest of the night home alone, can't exactly be verified. There's also the fact that a patient at a hospital Emma previously worked at was fatally poisoned, though there's so little information about that particular incident that we can't really make any assumptions about Emma being responsible. However, the one caveat I have about labeling Emma as the murderer is that the source of most of her jealous rage was Barbara Liebman, not Mary. She definitely went out of her way to harass Barbara and sabotage her relationship with Madison, because Barbara took her place as Madison's mistress, and there was a good chance Madison would actually divorce his wife for her. If Emma wanted to orchestrate a murder plot, it just seems more likely that Barbara would be the target, since she seemed like much bigger competition for Madison's affections. Remember, Madison happily continued on his relationship with Barbara after his wife died, so getting rid of Mary really didn't help Emma's situation at all. Of course, obsessive stalkers are not known for making the most logical decisions, so you really can't rule Emma out as being the perpetrator. The real wildcard in this case is definitely Barbara's husband, Dr. Herschel Liebman. On the surface, he doesn't seem like a logical suspect. Even though Herschel obviously had good reason to hate Madison and had supposedly threatened to kill him, Mary did not do anything to wrong Herschel, so what motive would he have to murder her? After all, if Herschel were to eliminate Madison's wife, then that only speeds up the process for Barbara to leave her own husband to be with Madison. Under normal circumstances, there really wouldn't be any reason to believe Herschel was responsible, except for the really bizarre series of events which took place on the night of the murder. It's very problematic that Herschel just left his workplace and does not have a solid alibi for a good chunk of the approximate time period when Mary was killed. It's really strange that he would receive a phone call that his wife needed him at home, and then he spent the next hour or so collecting license plate numbers and turning them over to the police. Now, to be fair, if Herschel is telling the truth, then it sounds like he had been preparing for the possibility of catching his wife in the act of having an affair, and was following the advice of his lawyer to collect evidence to be used in court in case their marriage fell apart. But the officer on duty at the police station thought Herschel looked incredibly frazzled about the situation and his clothing was in disarray, which suggested something more was troubling him than learning about his wife's infidelity. Now, as suspicious as this looks, Herschel's actions do seem to go against the idea that this was a premeditated murder plot. When Herschel received the phone message at the hospital, it was relayed to him by an operator, so I'm sure they were able to verify that this call actually did take place. And since Herschel was in the middle of his shift, there's no way he could have known Mary would be home alone at the time, inside an unlocked house. I could see Herschel committing murder if it was a heat-of-the-moment crime of passion, brought on by catching his wife in bed with another man, but since Madison was at the Strother residence, we know for certain that he wasn't fooling around with Barbara on this particular night. And even so, who commits murder in the heat of the moment by poisoning a drink with carbolic acid? That takes a lot of calculated planning. I just don't see how a phone call summoning Herschel to his apartment in the middle of the night leads to him traveling to the Kawine residence and killing Mary. What's interesting is that it doesn't look like Barbara Liebman was ever considered a serious suspect in the murder, even though she was definitely the person who had the most to gain if Mary was out of the picture. It doesn't look like Herschel believed she was the one who actually left the message at the hospital for him, and he claimed that he found Barbara sleeping alone in bed when he returned to his apartment. I've always pondered the theory that Barbara really was the person who made the phone call, and that she summoned her husband away from work because she had just murdered Mary and needed his help to cover up the crime. But then, well, that would explain why Herschel was in such a frenzied state when he went to the police station. That doesn't account for why he would visit the station and ask them to run some license numbers in the first place. However, by all accounts, it sounds like Barbara became genuinely afraid of Madison after his wife's death and suspected he might have killed her, so I get the impression she had no involvement in what happened. Strangely, there doesn't seem to be any record out there of what actually happened to the Liebmans after this whole ordeal. Even though it says Barbara seemed to become afraid of Madison, I have no idea if and when their relationship came to an end, or if she wound up staying together with Herschel. I'm also not sure if Barbara ever revealed who the father of her unborn child was, and if she ever went through with an abortion, or if Madison performed it for her. I think it's likely Barbara and Herschel have both passed away by now, but I can't be 100% certain. Overall, I find it unlikely that Barbara committed the murder, and the three best suspects are still Madison, Emma, and Herschel. But it's hard to come up with a theory implicating any of these three, which makes 100% complete sense. However, one theory I've often seen pitched about this case is that Emma and Herschel committed the murder together. We know that the two of them did meet, and Emma informed Herschel about his wife's affair, and I'd say it's likely she was the anonymous caller who egged Herschel on and told him that if he didn't do something about the affair, she would. No one can be certain who actually left the phone message for Herschel at the hospital, claiming to be Barbara, but really, who else could it have been but Emma? And what if this message was a means to lure Herschel somewhere and get him embroiled in a murder plot? It's possible that Herschel did not murder Mary, but was somehow coerced by Emma into helping her cover it up. I actually think this theory might make more sense than many of the others, but there are still a number of holes. Emma's primary goal was to get together with Madison again, and while she may have thought murdering his wife would help put her one step closer to achieving that goal, I don't see how involving the husband of Madison's other mistress helps her plan at all. I mean, if Herschel is charged for his role in the murder, then there are really no more obstacles to prevent Madison from marrying Barbara, so Emma has gained nothing. And from Herschel's point of view, what exactly does he gain if he murders or involves himself in the murder of Mary? Eliminating your romantic rival's wife is not going to prevent your own wife from leaving you for him. It sounds like Emma was a very unstable, manipulative person, but could she have really convinced an otherwise law-abiding man like Herschel to go along with something like this? There are a number of possible scenarios for how this might have played out. What if Emma could have killed Mary, came up with a way to frame Barbara for the crime, and told Herschel she would hide the incriminating evidence if he helped her cover up the crime, and convince Barbara to stay away from Madison? I also considered the idea that Emma wanted to get the ultimate revenge by framing Madison for his own wife's murder. One of the most damning pieces of evidence against Madison is the syringe which was found in the bedroom drawer with his fingerprints on it, and his "I don't know how that got there" excuse doesn't make him look good at all. But Emma and Madison did work at the same medical center, so it's possible, however unlikely, that Emma could have somehow gotten a hold of a syringe from there containing Madison's fingerprints and planted it in the drawer in an attempt to frame him. If Emma was involved in Mary's death, then her likely endgame would have been to get back together with Madison. The murder did accomplish one goal in that it seemed to damage Madison's relationship with Barbara, since she started to believe he might be responsible, but when all was said and done, Emma did not wind up with Madison again. If I had to pick the most likely scenario for what happened, I'd say the simplest explanation is the correct one, and that Mary was murdered by her philandering husband because he wanted out of the marriage. Maybe Madison wasn't as drunk as he appeared to be that night, so after the Struthers went to bed, he slipped out of their house and then went back home to murder his wife before returning. There are just too many suspicious actions on his part, particularly his decision to dispose of Mary's glass of bourbon, for me to think he's 100% innocent in all this. But on the other hand, I just cannot overlook the strange series of events involving the phone call to Herschel that night. It's entirely possible that Emma was just messing with Herschel again, and that the whole situation had nothing to do with Mary's murder, but if so, that's awfully coincidental timing. If the newspaper carrier's sighting of the third car parked at the Kawine residence is accurate, then that would lean towards someone else besides Madison being the perpetrator, and I wish there was more information out there about whether Emma or Herschel drove a light blue convertible like the witness described. I don't know, there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle in this case, but they don't all quite fit together. This is one of those rare spousal murder cases where you just can't 100% commit to the husband did it scenario. Anyway, over 50 years have passed, and whoever the perpetrator of this crime was, they're likely dead by now. But remember, some cold case detectives decided to look into this again, and attempted to interview Emma LaPatte in 2009, so it looks like they haven't completely written this off. Even if no one can be prosecuted for the murder, Mary's two children might still be alive today, and they deserve to learn the full truth about what happened. So if you happen to have any information on the carbolic acid cocktail murder, and know the identity of Mary Mars Kawine's killer, please contact the Lexington Police Department at 859-258-3700. That's 859-258-3700. But if you just have your own theory about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Just wanted to give another shout out to the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. Need to provide my thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. We also have two new listeners who have signed up for recurring monthly donations, and they are Purity and Laura Lee, so thank you very much, you two. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. We also have a Facebook discussion group for The Trail Went Cold, so if you want to discuss the cases featured on this podcast with myself or your fellow listeners, feel free to join at any time. I also wanted to remind you that I will be representing The Trail Went Cold by appearing on Podcast Row at CrimeCon, which is being held at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel in Nashville from May 4th to the 6th. If you're planning to purchase tickets to the event and haven't done so already, you can visit crimecon.com and receive a 10% discount by entering the promo code TTWC. That's TTWC. Like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website, so if you're feeling generous and want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we'd be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.